for all the adult money and adult money council services. And first of all, I'd like to welcome all councillors, officers and members of Preston Public here tonight. So, starting off with the agenda, item one, apologies for absence.
An apology from Councillor Hooks and Councillor
Item two, declaration of interest, if any. So all members will have received a copy of it, of the agenda tonight, and all any declarations of interest. Item three, public minutes of the meeting held on the 16th of December 2022. So you have all received a copy of the minutes. Are there any comments or questions on these? In which case I will propose them. Do I have a second? Councillor Riddell. In which case, all in favour of adopting the minutes?
Yeah, can I just point out it's 2022 and not 21?
No, sorry. The meeting was held on the 16th of December 2021. So all in favour of accepting those? Yeah. Any against? And any extensions? Thank you. So those have been carried. So moving on to item four, urgent business to consider So moving on then to item five, the Treasury Management Strategy Statement and Annual Investment Strategy for 2023, at which point I will hand over to Lisa to give the presentation to the board.
Thank you, Chair. And so this is the annual Treasury Management Investment Strategy for 2023. And it's followed a three-sector report that constitutes the committee each year for scrutiny of governmental forecasts for approval. This report is to review the annual Treasury Management Strategy, the annual investment strategy, and also the statutory MRP policy. First, before we do that, it's worth outlining the role of Treasury Management. Treasury Management is management of the local authorities, investments and cash flows, banking, with a large impact on market transactions, and effective control of the risks associated with those activities, and the pursuit of optimum performance consistently with the reports. Schedule 1 sets out our Treasury Management policy statement, which is aligned with the requirements set out in the code of practice, which the local authority we are required to follow. So, firstly, in regard to the MRP policy statement, the MRP is the minimum revenue provision that local authorities are required to set aside in their revenue budget, essentially to repay debt each year. And it is a statutory requirement that we have to follow a statutory guidance. In terms of the policy statement, there is no parish changes from the previous year. So the pre-2008 April debt will continue to be repaid based on existing practice pre the prudential and following framework at 4% annually. And then in post April 2008, which is when the prudential framework came into effect, will be repaid over the estimated life of the relevant expenditure. It also incorporates options for voluntary repayments, which of course the authority has done previous years, and will also contain the evidence of the return. In terms of the statutory prudential indicators, these are set out in section 3 of the strategy. The first of those is to set out the estimated capital expenditure. And these are shown on the screen there and aligned with the medium term financial strategy. But just take into account and highlighted there some estimates to carry forward from the current financial year. The table in the middle of the presentation shows how that expenditure is proposed to be funded as per the medium-term financial strategy. For the current financial year, it does include can see in the final box there is the capital council requirement. Now, the capital council requirement is the council's underlying need to borrow. So, capital expenditure that has not yet been financed from either the revenue budget, capital received, or grants received. And what you can see there is the capital council requirement increasing or forecasting increase in 21-22, which is directly linked to the fleet replacement, followed by a reduction, again that's linked to statutory and voluntary payments as shown in the previous section. And towards the back end of the period, it started to increase again, linked to the proposed borrowing in the medium term financial strategy, linked to the high school. Section 4.1 and 4.2 outline the COVID management position. What you can see on screen is a graph as to how our investments have fluctuated throughout the year. Now, a common trend in terms of fluctuations there. However, what you can see is the balances are significantly higher than what we were in the past, and that is predominantly due to. So what you can see on the screen is a graph of our treasury management balances throughout the year and how they have increased. Now that trend is common, what you will see in any normal year. So the spikes are effectively when council tax and business rates would normally come in at the beginning of the month, and then there's a drop when the pre-tax are essentially paid to the pre-sector authority, so the government, county council, etc. What there is an underlying trend of higher cash balances than would be seen in a normal year, and that's directly linked to COVID-19 grants, funding that the council has received, but also cash advances in relation to business rates relieved. But what we will see in the next few months is those balances drop quite significantly. So the next section in terms of the treasury position shows the borrowing, and it shows the external borrowing at the top of the screen there, and the limited reduction, which is predominantly due to the small amount of annuity loans that the council has. Most of the fixed term loans are not due to mature until after this period. What this table does is compare the external borrowing with our underlying need to borrow, and demonstrates that we are in an underborrowed position, which means we are only borrowing capital purposes. If we were in an overborrowed position, then that may be an indication that we were essentially not borrowing for capital purposes, which is not allowable. Just a note underneath there that, as we've already mentioned, the CFR includes the fleet replacement in 21-22 and COVID associated with the high school project, which is aligned with the financial strategy. As we've already mentioned, it also includes the allocation of the chief capital receipts during the CFR. One thing to note, and this is later in the presentation, is that the figures do not include the impact of IFRS 16 leasing. So essentially there is an accounting standard that initially was supposed to come into effect from April 2022, which would bring the number of first of all operating leases onto the balance sheet. So in effect it would alter these figures, it would increase them. However, there is currently a consultation now that is due to delay that implementation. The next two sets of figures show our operational boundary and authorised limit for borrowing. These are not, at this stage, not proposed to change. The forecast to begin this 3-year window means that the capital proposal to begin. Council and FF would still be within this window. However, which takes us on to a comparison theory. So this graph brings all those aspects together. The blue lines show the trend of external borrowing. The purple line shows the underlying need to borrow, so the capital financing requirements, throughout that data, throughout the period of this treasury strategy, and then on to the future, and then the red and the green line show the authorised limit and operational boundaries, reflecting that effectively if the proposals within the MTFS in terms of borrowing were to continue and we were to find other resources to finance that borrowing, then we would need to review those authorised limits and operational boundaries in the future. There's the prospect for interest rates. Now, this is a very moving position at the moment. So the report as it stands shows the forecast for interest rates at that time, but things have actually changed since then. So the forecast is shown at paragraph 4.3 and demonstrates the first increase in the bank rate in May 22, although we do now know there has been subsequent bank rate increases. But the budget assumes 0.5% for next year, rising to 7.75% in 23-24, and then 24-25, 4%. In terms of a borrowing strategy, this is set out at 4.4 of the presentation. No new external borrowing is planned at this stage. 2022-23. There is provision included in potential borrowing in relation to the Times Fund in line with capital programme proposals, and the MTFS continues to make provision for substantial voluntary set aside from future capital receipts, which of course deliver the savings for the revenue budget. An opportunity for early repayment of debt will continue to be monitored, but at the current time, it's highly unlikely that those opportunities will materialise. In terms of investment strategy, this is set out in section 4.8 of the report, and in line with the state of practice and statutory guidance, essentially the security of our investments has to be the primary consideration for the authority, followed by liquidity, and then looking to generate the return. So, as it says there, security of our investments and the minimisation of risk. It sets out the methodology for counterparty selection, which is in line with the approach recommended by our treasury management advisors, LINC, so it's LINC's creditworthiness methodology. But on top of that, we take account of information in the financial press, share prices, and the strategy outlines for countries that the council invests in, a minimum rating of AA. Investments for longer than a per year are limited to 5 million, and 4.8.16 sets out the counterparty limits. Again, that's about minimising exposure to any particular one counterparty. The investment strategy continues to incorporate scope to invest in property funds, which would provide diversification into a new asset class. However, it does set out that this would be subject to additional approval stroke governance procedures at the appropriate time. And then just to highlight really in terms of other matters, I've already mentioned the implementation of IFR 16, which would increase the figures in the report. bring operating leases onto the balance sheet. This was due to come into effect in April 22. However, there is, as I've mentioned, a consultation out at present which proposes deferring that. Just to highlight as well that the professional codes of practice that the council would like to follow, the prudential and treasury codes, were revised in December 2021. However, because of the lateness of the adoption of those codes, actually formal adoption in terms of the reporting requirements are not required until 23 and 24. But the main changes are highlighted at Schedule 6 of the statutory document. So that covers the key points in the document. The recommendation for the committee to consider is essentially to recommend that for council that the Treasury Management strategy statement, the minimum revenue provision policy, and the annual investment strategy 22-23, as I said, and the report. I'd like to take any questions through you, Chair.
Thanks for that presentation. First, can I just say thank you to yourself and the Cabinet for working out that has gone into pulling all the support together and presenting this tonight. With that then, are there any comments or questions from councillors? Councillor Chowdhury.
Yeah, that's true. Just to be clear, the recommendation is to recommend that all council strategy and other strategy statement is approved. Having said that, this strategy makes reference to borrowing for the town's fund, and particularly the Project B. But the council has not decided on that Project B at the moment. So it really makes a lot of sense. I don't think we can vote on this strategy as it stands. I don't think it's right that this committee should be asked to vote on a strategy on a policy which the council has not adopted, approved or adopted yet.
Essentially, this is a strategy. The proposal has not been asked to vote on the proposals in the MTFS. And it's essentially the way cash management and borrowing will be managed.
Well, again, the MTFS hasn't been approved either. So I just don't think this is the right document at this moment in time for this committee to take a hold on. It's fundamentally, it's just not right that we are voting on something that the council has not kind of committed to yet.
Effectively, and obviously this is the audit committee part of the meeting, so it's a governance aspect. So I suppose it's for you to say, from a governance perspective, what do you object to?
Sure, look, I understand where you're coming from, but from where we are sitting as a committee, we don't think that we are in a position to vote on this strategy at the moment until we know what the council wants to do going forward, and or remove the reference from this strategy to anything to do with the town's fund or Project D.
So just to say, you know, I think this strategy hasn't been adopted by full council. This is your chance to scrutinise that decision to see whether that recommendation goes forward to full council. So the point you're making now, this is the opportunity to make those points and when it comes to the vote whether we accept this or not, to then decide whether you feel that we would accept this recommendation. So again, the point has to have it. Thank you. Councillor Brown.
Yeah, I sort of agree with Councillor Chamberlain. I can't support this recommendation, no, the council either. And I agree with you in regards to reference to the Thames Fund Project D. And in fact, I've been told that is for a future council to decide whether or not it was on that. So I don't absolutely understand why it's in this strategy, that's for a future council to decide. And I absolutely do not agree with the recommendation going forward when there is uncertainty about how this council is going to fund £10 million for any project in the town deal period. And that's one reason why Council Board is, because of the reason Council Board is, at the end of the last meeting, I don't support the financial, I guess, strategy of the current administration. But predominantly, the fact that it references Project D, the fact that it references potential borrowing for Project D, when that borrowing is for a future council to decide, and we're only voting on the principle of Project D as the council, not the way it's going to be funded, I can't support this at all, and I can't support that recommendation going through for Council Arthur.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Are there any other council questions by council? Yep,
Councillor. Thank you, Chair. So with that, the graph that you got on about the authorised limit and operational boundaries in the CFR, is it my understanding, if I read it correctly, that we are, when it hits 25.6, we are getting close to that authorised limit?
That's correct, yes.
That's
obviously assumed that the 9.9 million of potential borrowing is required at that point in time, but there may be opportunities between now and then to utilise other funding which would reduce or even eliminate the need to borrow.
Thank you. Towards that authorised limit, we're also reducing our council reserves at the same time. It puts us in a bad position for the future to reflect those reserves when the time comes.
Thank you, Councillor. Are there any other comments or questions? If there are any additional councillors, I don't know which point I'll finish the vote. So I propose to accept the recommendation of the report. The full council approved the Treasury Management Strategy Statement, Minimum Revenue Provision Policy, and Annual Investment Strategy 2022-23, as set out in the appendix of this report. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Sylvester, and all those in favour? All those against? That is any abstentions. Okay. So,
can I ask you a question, Chair?
Yeah.
You chair the meeting, so you're in control of it. How many times will you allow people to speak, provided they speak without raising the same thing twice?
So,
what's the limit?
So, as per the rules of the meeting, councillors get an opportunity once to speak on an item, and then write a reply. When it comes to item 7, given the density of projects there, I'll come off that with an item to have.
I don't believe that's correct.
So the rules, procedural rules are laid out in the Constitution that speak for a motion. A member can speak for a maximum of 10 minutes on one particular item. Obviously, clearly this isn't a motion, but I think it can be carried forward that you've had that opportunity to speak, Councillor Shannon, and you've taken that opportunity. So therefore, the rules follow for this committee as
it was. Why did you allow Councillor Shannon to speak twice?
So I allowed him to speak and then the right to reply to what he said. Councillor Chaffrey.
This is the scrutiny committee. We're not on the line debating a motion as such. How can you scrutinize something? Because you have a number of questions. If you are only allowed to speak once, how can you scrutinize anything? This is a farce, it's a mockery. This is honestly, we're wasting our time sitting here. This is absolutely ridiculous. Change the title of this committee. Don't go to scrutiny. Yeah, that's called a lip service committee. Or a representative committee.
I think the suggestion is if you would like to phrase that, we are going to be a prosecutor, so feel free to put that in my opinion as well. Okay? Yes, I'm not sure that what you've been said is correct. My understanding of the Constitution is that the rules that apply to debate in the Constitution in full council do not apply to committee.
Thank you. And they do council, they do. Actually, they do follow.
Section 3A24 is the personal recollection.
Councillor Happy.
I completely agree with Councillor Jarrett about it. This is a lot of information that there's going to be local points and should really have local discussion and scrutiny. If that's in a constitution without other point, that's just wrong. There's so much information we have to scrutinise in this meeting. And just having that sort of just that one time to speak then rights required of certain parts of it. When there's so many parts of it I could go through this, that, the other, that could get me wrong. I just feel that's wrong.
Any other comments maybe? So we're going to move on then to the first agenda. So if you want to set item 6, Commissioner, you throw this call.
Thanks, yes. So, as we can recall, we've got essentially four subgroups looking at different reviews. Starting with the waste management review. So, we approved the report to go forward to cabinet in recent meetings. We're looking to align that to the review of the other scrutiny committee who are undertaking a similar review. That committee have also approved their recommendations going forward as well, so we're in the process now. Aligning both those reports, the reports of cabinet to provide the recommendations of both separate reviews, and one of these to cabinet and four for action to mark them. In terms of the mayoralty review, we can continue with some research that members have to be undertaken around options for alternative options. And so we are focusing on that shortly with the subgroup to go through that and take that forward. Happy for members to put comments in for the survey that has been indicated as being circulated to all local members on their thoughts and feelings on that as well. So we will put those into impressive. The DFG review, we will look to bring colleagues from Chems and Dog to answer questions of the committee at the March meeting this committee. And finally, the RCT review, so we are the research that's been asked for on that one as well. So again, we'll get meetings in the direct subgroups very shortly.
So. Are there any comments or questions on any of those raised in the scrutiny you'd like to add to that? Okay, perfect. So we're then moving on to item 7.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I reference section 3, part 22 of the Constitution. First of all, I reference part 23 to answer a question that Councillor Fitzpatrick asked earlier. Part 23, section 3A, references that the rules that were agreed for full council meetings apply to the committee to 3A, section 23. 3A, section 22 governs the suspension of standing orders. I'd like to propose that we suspend the standing orders for this next item. That can be reapplied at the end of the item. I'd like to propose that members of the public are also allowed to ask questions on these reports, and specifically the projects that come forward at the attending board. If you wish to restrict that to a limited time at the end of the council debate, then that's perfectly up to you. But I would certainly like to recommend and propose suspension of the standing orders to allow members of the committee to ask more than one question, to take part in the debate, and to fully scrutinise the reports that we've got proposed this evening. I make that proposal.
Through the chair, if I may. So, to absolutely confirm what Councillor Grove was just stated there, so section 3A of the Constitution, which is the council meeting procedure rules. And so the rule that Councillor Grosvenor referred to there is section 22, which is suspending the standing orders. So that would require a set on establishing what the process is now for everyone's benefit. So that would require, so the council member has raised the motion, that would require some discussion on that, and then that would then go to the vote of this committee as to whether the rules are suspended. The first part of that motion, about the council member, is that to not prohibit or limit the amount of time or the number of questions that members can ask on a particular item. There's nothing in the constitution that actually limits it to the number of questions, it's the amount of time that each member has, the amount of time that a member can speak. Okay? I know you know the rules council are going, but for everybody else's benefit, too, please do bear with me. The second point raised there about allowing members of the public to ask questions. There is no rules in the council which allow members of the public to ask questions.
Yeah, but I'm suspending the rules applicable to government meetings, which should allow the chairman, at his discretion, to allow members of the public to ask questions. I don't see there's an issue with that. Members of the public, for the first time in my 20 years as a councillor, have turned up to a scrutiny meeting tonight to demonstrate their concerns and their real genuine fears about some of the projects and some of the proposals that this council has put forward, the Chamber forward, to change the one trend. And as we are a scrutiny committee, we should allow members of the public to ask questions about these projects to allay, I guess, some of the fears they've got, and so that they can support this. They feel, in the main, that they're being ignored, that they are not being listened to, and I think, as a council, we should recognise that and allow them to ask questions. Certainly, it's a chairman's expression. There's nothing in the rules to allow members of the public to ask questions. What I'm asking for the rules is suspended anyway. So that should be applicable, and the chairman should allow members of the public to ask questions.
And if we were all just going to be at the proposal to suspend the standing orders that Councillor Murray has proposed, do I have a second? Councillor Fletcher. So now we'll go to the vote. All those in favour of suspending the standing orders? All those against? And any abstentions? At which point the motion is defeated.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. With regards to Section 3A, Part 18 of the Constitution, which governs questions, can I at least give you some advice, if you may wish to accept or not, about how we handle this particular item? This item governs a number of projects, and instead of, I would suggest, asking members to ask questions of all of those projects.
If I may interrupt Councillor Gray, well, I think, just bear with me, please, one second. Councillor, the Chair, Councillor Clark, is going to cover that item when he introduces the next item. I think you'll be satisfied with what he's about to say. Before the decision is made
or whether to accept all the rest with these. And this is our opportunity as a scrutiny committee to pass forward our comments on each of the projects. So for each of the projects, we will be taking a proposal to pass on those comments as well before that decision is made by Cabinet. So with that, I will, in fact, one thing to note as well is that this is your opportunity to scrutinise the projects in terms of whether their business case and whether we think they will bring value point to the council, rather than necessarily overarching views on these projects of what we can do the Treasury library criteria. So with that, I'm going to hand over to James, who will go through the presentation.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. With regards, and I don't want to interject one more question. With regards to the projects this evening, one of them is specifically under control of the County Council. Is anybody here from the County Council? How will we deal with questions that relate to the County Council project and aspects of this that have been produced by the County Council? Will the officers be able to answer those questions on the County Council project?
So officers of the deputy will go to any questions for you. Okay, so at which point I'll hand over to James to give the presentation.
Thank you, Jeff. So as you said, the purpose of the report is set up, the purpose of the report is set out in documents being circulated is to provide details on the progress of the attachment programme. And you also mentioned there, Chair, that in this space where we've been discussing and finding on service policy ahead of the cabinet meeting that's for coming, so the recommendation of the board that the community youth programme provides observation to the cabinet, which will form part of the report that goes forward. So firstly, to mention projects C and F, so that's the Regional Learning Centre and the bridge project. So project C, we have had approval now from government to defer that to September of 2022. Ordinarily, the projects, should they go forward, will be submitted to government in March 2022. That's really due to the withdrawal of the University of Wolverhampton project sponsor. That happened in November last year, so it's a limited time to be able to take that forward as we would like into the process. Obviously, there's their options for alternative delivery for the education provider that are being considered at the moment. Similarly, the project F. Have been removed from the programme by the town of the board. Really, is the sustainable business case with the original ambition of the project. So, County Council's cabinet have agreed a slightly different approach, which a lot of the bridge than the original agreement with the town of the board. An extra £4 million being required to take that forward. The town of the board will accept that. So, that has been removed. £7 million that was set up in the appendix. So that leaves us with the programme as shown there. So, Project C and F, as you can see there, we have plotted. The remaining five projects that we'll be discussing tonight are as described there. So, we're here to talk about Project D, G, H, and J. As I said, plotted the allocations that have been from the task force are shown.
Can we ask questions on projects C and F before we go on to the next project?
We'll go to the presentation and then we'll take them through your chair. The chair has said project on our lines. Something else that you'll hear us talk about when we go through the presentation is projects or PCRs.
It does make it somewhat difficult to scrutinise each pot if we have to hear the whole before we can look at each individual pot. So what's the problem with presenting each pot, scrutinising it, and then going up to the pot?
So one of the considerations in that is just to give a full rounded picture of the proposal and project before everyone.
There's everybody in this chamber that has to go a full round picture, I'll be very surprised.
else we're going to talk about. As mentioned, the
cost ratio for BCRs. So, business cases each present to us cost ratio, which is really looking at the economic cost against the economic benefits to provide a BCR, as I said. Within the table, you can see some descriptions that are provided by government as to what they would define. So, anything over 1 would be acceptable BCR, which would be something that would deliver a positive benefit. Over 2 is something that we call a high value. So, that's just to provide a bit of context in terms of BCR as we go through the presentation. I'm going to ask you some things to think.
So the project here, the Hamilton Linkages project, as the council land scheme. The original council obligation for the project is just over 2.8 million, and underneath that on the slide there you can see additional allocation were previously to form the project. So just as a reminder, this project is about the regeneration of the Brookside area between High Street, but also a portion of the school fences, not the portion of themselves, stretching from Burt Bridge down to the So this project will bring about the sprinkling area of the High Street using a mixture of uses. So things like community uses, large uses, residential uses, and so forth, overlooking the proportions of the area. So the BCR for this project is going to have 1.5, which was an acceptable So in terms of the consultation of this project, there's been a total of 3 months of consultations spread across 3 different stages. This was stage 1 contour ideas, where a number of options were set out for the members of what's common on, as well as suggest ideas of their own. These were then compiled into the stage 3 consultation, which led on those types of issues that were most important, looking at things like is it in the right place, is it in the right parking, and the final stage 3 consultation, which was this is not the first scheme, this is something that people support or do not support. So this was our scoping complex website with a number of in-person and online events as well. So the project itself is split into 2 phases, phase 1B and phase 2. The timeline program focuses on delivery of phase 1B, which is the visitor conversion of the land building, and it happens to Amateur Passage and Ground Remembrance. The third one use, the water tower, converted to water tower building. Any townhouses for market purposes, the landscape courtyard area, and 22 key weapon buildings. The other uses are called the phase 2 of the project, that isn't to help deliver supplementary to phase 1B, they can come on both parts of them and stream sooner, they're just separate to the townhouse movement deliveries. So, in terms of the finances for the project, so these can split into preliminary costs, which cover planning division fees, land acquisition costs, which is about purchase of land required for the project, total construction costs, so that includes build costs, contingency fees, and building to a BREEAM excellent standard as well for sustainability. Profit costs, they're an estimate based on, so if the cost of 1,000, it might cost £10 per square foot to do something, maybe that's tender. There might be a certain profit margin that a contractor expects as part of that tender return. So it's just a sort of an accommodation of that. And that comes in total project cost of 23.6 million. Just looking at the funding sources, we have the original Townsend allocation and the additional allocation, as well as Section 106 consumption of affordable housing, that would be specifically for the affordable housing elements. So obviously, to go with phase 1B, there is a residual funding gap of 9.9 million. After those other ones investment been factored in. There is proposed that funding gap is met by the council on the process of this by the MCFS campus, that could be done through prudential borrowing. However, it is important to note that this represents a worst case scenario from the project point of view for a number of reasons. So, firstly, the 9.9 million does not count any capital income realised from the project that could be used to offset the cost of delivering the project. So, that's for example, where residential elements forecast to generate capital income in excess of 5 million. Similarly, if every constructed item that was done to project circulation B was sold at the end of the project, the net capital cost to the council from that 9.9 million would be in the region of 1.3 million based on current volumes. Secondly, it does not account for any possible revenue implications for the mitigated cost of repaying borrowing. So, for example, if the council in the future decides to operate or lease to operate any of the utilities, the there may be income to be borrowed that could offset repayment costs. And thirdly, the need to meet this funding gap is not immediate, and is not substantial until the years 2024-2025. And so there will be opportunities for this gap to be met by other external grant funding at that time. So, for example, recently we've seen the UK Shared Prosperity Fund has announced the 3-year, 4-year funded grant programme. So that means that the council will be receiving money through that grant programme. So, for example, that could be used for the specific elements of this scheme. So, such are a number of ways in which the council could mitigate or mitigate the cost of the financing of the gap. At the bottom there, it just sets out a crowdfunding profile for the years in which each element will come into the project. Thank you, James.
So the next few slides will provide an overview of the other projects across the programme, which we led by project managers from the individual responsible organisations. So we start with Project E, which is the enterprise store project led by the county council. Mr. Thomas alluded to is exposed to the hardship business project is to create a library and enterprise store in Burton, utilising the opportunity to provide by a marketable building. So the proposal really is to utilise a little under £7 million of council and pots. But the county council has also agreed to provide a contribution of £1.067 million. So add to that, there was further £1.036 million being required from elsewhere, which is something that we've picked up in the next four, which is about the project F funding and distribution. So their proposal is to bring together the library, ground floor of the market hall, there's some community learning, registry office, children's social services and the disability team into that central core within the town. So, we encourage a greater use of the area of the town centre through generating additional visits through the market hall and to create space for the current environment as well. And the DCR has been presented to us is 2.3 to 1, so going back to those definitions would be a high number for me. So, something that highlights in the business case is excellent skills and an opportunity through the hub to improve the profile of the area whilst also reinvigorating part of the town's heritage through the remarkable landmark and the state drive of the police and town centre. So the business case that we've had indicates the benefits of the core and how they align to a number of policy aspirations, for example, the skills of enterprise and economic agendas. Proposals are looking to support local economic and social objectives, and we'll see those leading to transforming the market core. And as mentioned, the project is an enabler for the harsh resilience project, and we have a chance to that project. It's also indicated that we cater as a business incubator space, provides some facilities. So, a number of examples shown here, such as super-fast broadband, on site Bluetooth, including printing capabilities, as well as bookable community spaces. As you know, the floor plans and the football calculators for the project. In terms of the consultation process, there was a 2-week consultation during October 2020 with 161 responses, of which 42% were in favour and 42% were against.
Through your chair, can I ask that members actually stay seated in their seats and not converse with the members?
Responses of which 42% in favour and 42% against, or 16% provided in comment. County Council also had a public consultation process across an 8-week period working through July to September of last year. So that utilised a mixture of online, hard copy, and face-to-face engagement sessions. Some of the information you can see there on the slide around that particular process. In summary, 1,161 people completed that survey with 893 or 77% disagree with the move. It's worth mentioning as well, going back to Project B, that a number of the next response to the Project B consultation, around 100, were largely negative as a result of opposition to the library. The Okay, so moving on to project G, which is canal towpath improvement. The town funding allocated to this is just over £500,000. Again, in the project funding notes, there's £200,000 there, that's the allocated towards this there. But the simple purpose of this project is to upgrade the service of the towpath that runs along the Trenton Canal from the Branston area up to the Shotton Park area. Really, so it can be super all around for cyclists and pedestrians to use to improve accessibility and connectivity in the area. And our business base has calculated a BCR 2.6:1. There's a couple of images here to show what the area is currently like. So you can see the current condition really, but the business case is estimated that there's a real potential for more use moving forward. So the project focuses on upgrading the current surface, which as I said there is quite muddy and uneven, to a wider path, needing a self-bound aggregate surface, which would then be suitable all year round for cyclists and pedestrians, as I said. So the reason for the estimates for increased use are there are a number of new housing developments around that proposed area. So might be subject to some more use over the next 5 years, maybe that current service will no longer be a purpose. So they're indicating a community benefit from improving those pathways. So for example, the business case is indicating that the improvements will contribute to increased physical exercise, to better access to better resource of cycling, or walking, or running. And similarly, it also contributes to improving the active travel connectivity in the town as well. So folks are looking to make it easier for people to walk or cycle to work or whatever their destination might be. Also linking into the national cycle network as well. So, I mean, I appreciate that's very difficult to see, but that's indicative of the proposed scope. Basically, we're going to start by flying through the middle. The proposal is to use just maybe 4 kilometres of towpath. So that sort of water area at the bottom end of the red line, that's Branston Water Park, taking the screen to the shop and regenerate the top of the screen, really just to help show you the scale of the project. In terms of the consultation here, the process of the table of 2020 shows 6% of the funds were supported by Project G. However, they have indicated prior to delivering the program being agreed. Should this proposal be taken forward, the Canal River Trust will organise a further process to a walkthrough on cycle consultation to move forward to the route. Also indicating the business case that will be engaging with all the stakeholders, so for example, any angling clubs that might have fishing rights or boat and mooring rights, or any other individuals that might be temporarily affected by any development works in the area. Okay, so project H, this is the secondary county council project, which really flows from the local cycling and the local infrastructure plan. The project is to undertake enhancements to the cycling network, and so I've been around 4 million from the town of Potts, looking to remove barriers to cycling and walking, again to try to improve activity to the town. And to complement that, there will also be some cycling parking installed at key locations in the area. And that image on the right hand side is really trying to illustrate challenges to the east and west connectivity within the network, which is something that is proposed is looking to address. There's an indicative scheme on the quantity of just the business case indicating a cost ratio of 3.22. So here's a summary of the proposed enhancements. So we're looking at the steps fully terminated two-way cycle routes along the border road between Kingham Place and the railway station. There would also be wide connections including improvements to the national cycle network and streets to residential areas where a safe environment would be created to allow cyclists to travel on the road, sharing space in quieter streets. There would be enhanced crossing provision on the A511 with segregated connectivity to the residential areas to the north. As I've mentioned, there will also be cycle provision and parking provision for school at key destinations. So again, I'm not expecting to see the final detail of that, but the marked line shows the indicative scheme plan, which is subject to further development through the necessary detail design phases. And we're really looking at screen splitting into two sections. So if you start at the very top right, that green area there, that's Dornilow Road, and it turns around into Gower Street, and onto York Street, turning into Waterloo Street, which is that road that you can see dropping off the bottom of the screen there. And that restarts and turns from the top left of the screen, again off Waterloo Street, which goes down onto 30th Street and Ringmore Street, along to Borough Road area, down at the bottom left hand side. So that's the town for the North Station area. In terms of the consultation process, the proposals so far are based on consultation exercises and taking part in the local site and the infrastructure plan and the active travel fund in the past couple of years. The business case includes proposing further consultation on those detailed designs that are forward to undertaking directly with local communities and also through the traffic regulation of the process. The final project is being led by Burton and South Yorkshire College, providing a specialist educational office offer, utilising within £3 million from the town of Hartwell, a small amount of match money from the college for the conditions as well. And their proposal is to develop a relevant curriculum, delivering from new facilities to allow learners and employees to spend time on professional practices and how providing future workforce skills relevant to the developing needs of local industries. So again, the curriculum is there just to show what those facilities might look like. At the moment, what the business is indicating the BCR. So as I mentioned, the project is going to take an upgrade to the college facilities in Burton to provide state of our curriculum offer facilities, but particularly in the areas of health and social care, and also STEAM, which is science and technology, engineering, arts and maths. And their intention is to work hand in hand with local employers and businesses to ensure that the facilities replicate the real world environment, to get better experiences for their learners from the curriculum. Really with the name of creating a talent pool, which can also help to attract new businesses into the area, and help reshape the economy by helping the growth of a number of these future focused into the area. So for example, they're announcing new benefits in the businesses showing the areas of electronics and cyber security, but also digital and game development are further the sectors that they're looking to focus. Finally, in terms of consultation, there was quite a big recruitment process held during September last year. The work that we've gone on building a business case, through that work we've been providing a number of letters of support from local schools and local businesses based on this as well. Really starting things like the benefits of this pathway through learning into local income. Okay, so that's the project and what they're looking to do. We've had the business case now forward for five of our projects that's taken from the student accountable equation. A summary of what all the business cases have provided within the paper surveys tonight. Of course, we are evaluating all of those. There's a link from executive summaries that have been circulated. We're taking the trade agreement approach, considering the business cases in this five case model. So, that's strategic case, economic case, commercial, financial management cases for each project. So we've taken a green book compliant business case template and asked for this to be completed. And that allows us to have a consistent approach in terms of the submissions that we receive, also the evaluation of those. There's an awesome team that can review all the business cases since their submissions. Undertaking individual evaluations and comments that are collectively to come to a consensus on each of those. Feedback is being given out to the project sponsors, which are then being returned for amendments to the business cases, which we are contributing to the wider evaluation. But as I say, that process has allowed us to have a consistent approach to grading and view all those submissions for compliance. Just quickly in terms of the next steps and timeline, of course we're here to discuss this tonight. Reports will be going forward to Cabinet on the 14th of February, the next town hall board meeting will be held towards the end of February. As we mentioned earlier, there will be a report to Council on the 28th of February, 14th of March. I'll back up to that. And the submission to government deadline is the 24th of March, when projects that sort of
any further things at all. Just before we continue, just as a, if anyone just having your phones or anything, they could just put them on sign, just to get everything you want. Yes, that's a good question.
Yes, Chair, before we move on to the individual projects, I'm going to make an observation and a question that might be directed to James or perhaps Chris. My observation is that there are some members of the scrutiny committee in the room, and you have chosen not to give your discretion for them to allow to speak at this meeting, which means that a fair number of members of this council will not have a chance to get involved in the scrutiny of this very important issue. And I'm just wondering, why isn't this report going to the Community Regeneration, Environment, Health and Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee also? It's just one.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's really, it was a very money type of audit approach. So, mentioned at the outset, I mean, the governance process as well, we've got the process around governance, as I said. That's really why it's here, with the value for money approach on community generation.
Each of us have probably worked with example that decides to work with school council. The 48 there where all councillors will get an opportunity, because the other committee did want to raise any questions or bring anything to it, they wouldn't be within their mind as a scrutiny committee to do that in the process as well. But in terms of governance and process of this, the consultation of this committee is a part of that formal process in terms of development and business plans. So with that then, as I mentioned before, we will take each project individually in alphabetical order, including the two projects that aren't currently going forward at this stage, either for the internal or because they are no longer present. What we will do then is.
Can I go on a clarification, please? Does the 10 minutes coincide with each individual project or the actual full discussion that?
Yes, so because of the amount of projects and the interest on all of them, and to make sure that we give each project a fair chance, each council will have an opportunity to speak on each individual project, as well as the right to reply to any of the questions raised. Which is why we've done that for this one, so the councillors do get a chance to speak on each project.
I know you intend to take them in alphabetical order. It doesn't have to be alphabetical order. But as Project F, right, the release of funds from that is then affecting the rest of the things. Could we not deal with Project F first?
I'm up to you. So, with that then, first decision is Project F, which is the new pedestrian and cycle crossing through the Trent, which, as agreed by the Town Deal Board, has been removed from the programme, and the funds from it have been reallocated. So, in regards to Project F, are there any questions on the councillors? Councillor Chaffee.
So, just to clarify, so I have 10 minutes to speak on this item. I must admit, that's not, even though we get 10 minutes to speak, that's not scrutiny. I want to go by protest only. And I know that that's not going to be scrutiny. Because we've got officer data, we've got people there from the cabinet that have to be there. And then there are questions, and the questions stem from the answers as well. But if you only get the question by once, that's not scrutiny for me. But not anyway, moving on. Project F has been shelved altogether. Doesn't this undermine the credibility of the projects and the whole program, bearing in mind the whole fund integrated together and came together as a holistic regeneration project conversion? So the first thing is obviously convince me that there's a credible plan bear in mind, before we even took the first steps, that we've fallen on the first hurdle. The other point is, in terms of when this project was conceived, you said that some costs were to be confirmed. Do we really know what the full cost is even now? So I'll leave it at that. So I want somebody to convince me that we have a kind of plan, because I think we are heading towards a big disaster here. And I reserve my right to speak on what I see.
Sorry, just to clarify, so that was in the last project, both of them were in the last project?
Yes.
Yeah. You want to say that one?
Thanks, Joe. I'm not quite sure what the question is and why I need to convince him of the project. It's been removed from the project altogether, and I don't see I need to convince members that was a good or bad idea. The purpose, as I understand it, of audit and scrutiny in this forum is to judge, to check, think, and ensure that the work to date has been in line with what the town's been expected at least many, many months ago. So all that really needs to be said on Project F is that town board have removed it and there's been clarification from the government that we can recycle the funds into various other projects, and the town board have agreed to do that. Other than that, I don't think there's much left to say. But I will try and answer the one question, the second question. I think the question was around the cost of the Project F in development so far. I've just asked Tom to clarify, I think it's £119,000 so far.
Councillor Fletcher.
Thank you, Chair. As you know, I was on the town day board, and in the very early days, the proposal for Project F was the footbridge across from Stainer Hollow to the washrooms. It was stated quite clearly that this was to provide access to the washrooms. Now, we all know the washrooms flood, and there are times when you can't go on certain parts of the washrooms. We accept that. Other times we can. I remember that quite clearly because I actually said, well, we'd like access to the washrooms from Wentzville as well. And they said they would consider that. Now, I understand fully that in the end they couldn't afford a bridge across from the State of the Hogs and a bridge across from the bottom of the New Road in Wentzville. So the latter one was defeated. When the final proposal came, it was for a footbridge across from Stainer Hollow, and a viaduct across the washrooms to join up with, and this is what I think it was, the town deal board said that this was too expensive, and they cut the viaduct and just left the bridge across from Stainer Hollow in the project. Right at the last minute, the county council removed their support for this project because they couldn't, they said, support a project which was only in use for part of the year. Well, I knew this from the very start, so that worries me. But then, we understand the 7 million at least is being used to prop up other projects which were now underfunded for whatever reason, that may be. Project prices have gone up. And one of those was some money for the livelihood. The other was to support Project D, which is now, instead of having 2 million, it's going to be 7 million. I have to question the motives of the County Council of Waukee to have their offices and the children's centre all together and the ones that in the market hall. Now, I don't understand why it had to be that way. The library could have stayed where it was. the county buildings could have moved upstairs into the library, but that just isn't true, as it would have at the market board. So, I'm concerned. But at the end of it all, there was some consultation on these issues, and it's now considerably changed. Are we going to get more consultation now that it's considerably changed? I don't think so.
So, Chen, I'd be happy to answer a question, but I'm not sure that there was one in Councillor Fletcher's statement, but I'm happy to take a question on Project F if he wants to ask me one directly.
Would you like to open for another question?
Not particularly, I don't know.
Yes. We just heard from the Councillor Fletcher, who was on the tenanting board with regards to Project F. I would accept the Councillor Fletcher perhaps we've done to deal with Project F, but we'll do that again next week. Now, he made reference to the County Council removing support for this bridge due to the fact that it's not going to be available for large periods of the year.
It's only going to be unavailable for small things.
Yeah, and the county council removed the support for it. Can I then question whether the county council intends to pursue funding for this bridge through other routes?
Probably just for the record, worth clarifying that the county council did not remove it there, but it did not come to the town board and remove the project and say they would accept to do it, they were quite content to proceed with the project, but they really wanted to do it if it was for viaduct, which would make it significantly different to what the consultation, what town board wanted to fund in the first place, a consultation that went with it, and there was no prospect, the high risk that the funding required for it wasn't going to be available. In terms of the question around whether or not the county council intends to fund the project, as I understand it, the county council has all committed funding to complete the bridge in its entirety. But you know, as I'm not county council, I can't comment further.
Councillor
Chair, first question, has the benefit cost ratio ever changed on any of the projects? And has the benefit cost ratio or Project E, G, and D change as a result of the new funding that has been funded by the project?
Councillor?
VCR was never prepared for Project F. I'll answer that as a earlier look project.
Councillor
Pate, maybe I didn't answer my question, didn't hear the question correctly. Has the VCRs for Project E, G, and D been updated because of the new funding that has been ascertained from Project F?
So the source of the funding doesn't change for VCR. Have some feedback.
Yeah, on Project F, maybe George or Dennis would be able to advise me. From the knowledge of the town board, but surely that project was worked on at the start before the bid went forward to government from that town board. Surely they knew what sort of bridge they were going to build and what environment they were putting in before they pulled the plug at the last minute. It just does send, it makes people think. Other reasons. That's what
Councillor,
Council Council haven't bought the project. The town board just decided that it wasn't able, was able to fund with the existing ones available to the town, and so it wasn't able to be funded fundamentally. That's the reason it got pulled. And as for the rest of it, it's not for either the town board or the borough council to comment on what the county council intends to do with the fund, with the project like funds or the project itself.
Thank you. Are there any other councillors who would like to comment on Project F? At which point then we'll move on to the next project, and I'll just go back to Alphabet's order. So next up is Project C, which is the Regional Learning Centre. And it is just worth pointing out that this is the project that has been deferred until September 2022. Are there any questions or comments by councillors in regards to this one?
Has there been any updates from Stafford University on the pursuit project and their willingness to come forward with committing to it?
Who would like to go? Councillor?
As I understand it, the university project is coming forward, which is not in a position to report any further on it. It's why it's been delayed. But this is also the change of plan.
Any other questions on Project C? Councillor Chadwick.
So, Mr. Washington, you know, we have a project where the partner decided that we weren't able to support. Why would ESPC take on that project and then take it and deliver to this kind of regeneration vision? This project, the partner again, a bid which was worked on with significant money, public money, to the government. Another partner has decided to pull out. So two projects already that the partner has pulled out. I just go back to my original question. These projects, there appears to be, they're not credible. What else are we going to find as we go along that these projects become unviable? I think it's a major, major risk to this council. I don't think, you know, what are we committing this council and the residents and taxpayers of East Staffordshire to, because this is amateur.
Thank you, Councillor Chadwick. Just a point of clarity for bringing Councillor Ivan. It's probably worth just pointing out that both Project F and Project C, the Project F has been withdrawn, and Project C will be coming back at a later date in September 3rd. So by that logic, we should also then have that project come back to the scrutiny committee when the business case has been presented for that. So in terms of the consideration of how that process works, the Town Deals Board decides which projects to take forward, which they have done here, and the ones they're taking forward currently are D, E, G, H, and J. And so they're the ones that we would ultimately be making comment on to then go forward to Cabinet next week. So in regards to Project F, because that project hasn't come forward to ESBC, there's not really anything to comment on in that regard. But it was worth us that we had a discussion in terms of what happened with that funding. In regards to Project C, because that one is still in its infancy of the business case, there are less details for us to scrutinise here by the fact that it hasn't come to us yet as a complete project to scrutinise. So Project F has gone, and we've had that discussion. Project C will be coming back, or should be coming back to us at a later stage, once that has been fully fleshed out, at which point you should have more of the details to then be able to scrutinise along that normal process as we're directing the project to where we get on to them. I just thought it would clarify that, and to the same councillors and the public here in terms of the process of how the project progressed through that. With that, then, I will hand over to Councillor Allen. Anything you'd like to add into that as well?
Thanks, Joe. I'll just to thank Councillor Chadwick for his expectation and confidence in the ECB's ability to step into the quite big shoes of a significant higher education establishment such as Wolverhampton University. I think my point is though really that we need a higher education partner to deliver this. It's entirely possible that ESBC may be able to do it as much as it is any Staffordshire County Council, but we think that it is best through alongside a higher education partner who has a track record in delivering hopes outside of its city.
Councillor Jaffrey.
I don't think I was suggesting that the ESBC to do the educational provision. My question around is confidence, or lack of confidence in our partners when the parliament was pulled out. Why did Wolverhampton University pull out? When they committed to, when they were with us, when the original bill was submitted to the government. That's the question, isn't it? Why can't this committee have an answer?
I'm not a member of Wolverhampton University Board, so I'm not able to say why Wolverhampton University was pulled out. They also, I was a little bit puzzled myself because they were quite, they made their reason for pulling out, as put out in the press release, was that the building was suitable, or the building was as it was when they went into the project and into the relationship with Tanvir Board in the first place, and that hasn't changed. So I'm not speculating what Wolverhampton University saw for on it.
It's probably just worth adding that Wolverhampton's leadership changed in the last two quarters of 2021, so that probably had a bearing on their feeling about the project.
So, I'm going to bring in Council Bowie.
Yeah, thanks. On Project C, I'm going to say that I meant to say it's on Project A, but I didn't get a chance to all that, so apologies. I want to thank all the members of the public attending this evening, and I apologise if they're not going to answer questions. On Project C, and on the programme in itself, I guess, you're right, this is the first time we've had a chance to scrutinise this programme of work this evening, and it's potentially going to occasionally 2 weeks, just over 2 weeks, and I'm assuming that you correctly, actually, it's over 2 weeks, it's coming to council, and it's the first chance we've had to scrutinise it. So, thank you very much for allowing this to take in the question this way. On Project C, can I ask, when was the request to government made to defer Project C, how long did it take for them to answer, and what justification was made for deferral? If possible, couldn't we see the note that was sent to government that requested it blank?
Just to be absolutely clear, I think Councillor Grover accidentally said that C was going forward in 2 weeks' time. It's not.
Now, so the program of work, sorry, just to clarify. This whole programme is going forward again, so in 2 weeks' time, potentially, as per the review that we've just seen presented by the officers, a date for the 28th of February is to come to council. We'll stop that date for March, so that's just only 2 weeks that this may come to council, and this can go some way to scrutinise, just to clarify my comments.
Minus
Project C,
just to be absolutely clear, that will be coming back to scrutiny in advance of September, and then on to council. In relation to the form that we completed to shift Wolverhampton, we can furnish that to councillors as well.
And in terms of the date the form was sent to government, how long it took for them to come back to clarify the letter?
You can see that in the chain of correspondence we've got with government.
Thanks, appreciate that.
Are there any other comments or questions by councillors? You've already had a chance to see the position. Which way then we will move on to Project D. So Project D is the high speed linkage project, and this is one of the projects that the business community receives this week. Are there any questions or comments from councillors in regards to Project D high speed linkage? Councillor Chadwick?
I have to say, I find this incredibly difficult to scrutinize because questions arise from the answers and you're not able to follow them up. But I guess the way I want to start with is what happens if another partner or stakeholder, through the chance of their leadership, decide to pull out of Project D, for example. What happens if the landowner is on the center line? And where do we go then? Now, when this project was put together, at that time, there was known that there would be some additional costs, but they weren't confirmed. And when we went out for public consultation, we knew that there would be additional costs, but they weren't confirmed. Do you know what? Those additional to be confirmed costs are now at £10 million. Yeah? To this council. And to service that £10 million is potentially £500,000 revenue that hall. And that is going to cost this council millions of pounds. When people are struggling with their putting the food on the table, how do you think the good people of East Africa are going to pay for this debt? How can such a significant sum, when we put this bill together to the government, and then went out to public, this was not explained. Did anybody unintentionally, potentially, mislead the public? Because I can't understand how we can miss out such a big, big sum. Going forward, how do we trust these numbers even now? How do we trust them? This is absolute shambles. The whole town being programmed, the risks, so there are risks still. But you know what, we're not telling anybody what those risks are. Why, as a member of this council, I am not told what those risks are? Why, where is the quantum? What is the quantum of that risk? Ultimately, I think we are saddening, potentially, we're saddening this council with a lot of debt. A lot of debt. But I don't think we're getting the full picture. Or somehow we're missing these things. And that's why it worries me. It worries me that we are embarking on this program, which frankly is not standing up to scrutiny, even at this early stage. And given the cost escalation, inflation, the way things are going, I have no confidence. I still remain to be convinced. And I am not hearing enough from the deputy leader or from the officers that actually gives me confidence. And it's all very well, you know, saying, you understand, and the attitude here this evening is quite dismissive. And frankly, if ultimately the controlling group would make the decision. Some of the decisions have been taken already by the leader of the council. But at least treat us with some respect. We are part of this council. We represent residents of this borough. Ultimately, it's the residents who will be paying back this debt. So hopefully, I'll be given the chance to respond and
I will ask whether this is your opportunity to scrutinise these now and come to those conclusions whether you think the business case is a stand or not. So in terms of you've not had opportunity, that is what this is as well. In terms of the evaluation of business cases themselves, you will have seen the report itself and the accompanying papers which are reporting, which do go off into all the detail of that. And the risks and benefits and evaluations of them, which are available to benefit the public as well, which are available on court support. In terms of answering your question, Kazan, do you want to come back to this?
Thanks, Joe. So, the difference with this project is that the ESPC is in fact a partner, it is a partner. In fact, it is a project sponsor. So, the risk of the ESPC pulling out of this, well, we will find out on the 28th of February, which is in a half week's time, but I'm fairly confident that the council will support. Will support the project. So the risk of pulling out, I don't think that's a realistic risk. But I think the point that Council Chairman is trying to make is that if we saddle the council, in his words, with 9.9 or £10 million worth of debt, what is the risk that we're then not able to purchase the property? Or without getting too deep into it for commercial sensitivity reasons, we're still in an advanced stage of terms with multiple calls, and so it will become pretty clear in a matter of weeks whether or not we're able to purchase that land. If we're not, then fundamentally the project doesn't go ahead, and that's a problem we have to deal with at that time. So whereas the borrowing doesn't actually start until next financial year,
So there is quite a way to go before we even get to the point at which we borrow that money, even if, and that assuming we have borrowed £10 million in the first place. I will just ask Tom in a moment just to elaborate on that, because I know that's the borrowing cost of £10 million is a worst case scenario, and there's a number of things that can improve that as we go as we move through it. Ultimately, full council will make a decision. It is right, and is has been practiced in local governments and national governments for many, many years. Political groups have their discussions in advance of full council meetings. The Labour administration did it in 2014, they did it many years before then as well, and the Conservative groups have done it for many, many years. So I don't think that is hidden, it's nothing on someone's point of view there. It's something that I think many members of the public understand. The end of the decision, the comment that the Council Chairman made, the comments about leaving, they're already making decisions. The only decision that the leaders made, as far as I'm concerned, is to drive regeneration in a way that no administration has done for many years. That's the only decision that the leaders made. And he did that in 2019 when he took over, and here we are now looking at significant regeneration, transformation of the town centre in a way that I don't think we've ever seen. So I just have something to cover off those bits about Tom.
I just referred on those 3 points that I made in the presentation, and I've raised on which that would be the category mitigated from within the project. I want to make one further point as a technical clarification around the consultation. At the point of time measurement plan submission in December 2020, the project was conceptual to be developed over the course of the year, co-produced with the public. So it's through the consultation that the uses of the project were identified and confirmed in an aspiration-led consultation. So at the end of that process, it can be made up with the cost of the project.
Councillor Chadwick, would you like to come back?
Thank you, Chair. In my written question, the question is, in the report it said that there are potential further additional revenue costs that may arise from this project. The response I've got, it says these are yet to be identified. What are they? I think, you know, please just want them. Why am I scrutinizing, you know? This is a joke. Okay? So, the question for you, is the land acquired? No. Question for you, if the landowner does not sell, so basically, what I say, this is something that's fair. If the landowner does not sell, the project will not go ahead. That's what we say. If the land for project is not available, the project will not go ahead. You know, this is my point. This is the confidence level that we have in these projects. Please, can we have some serious answers? Please. You know, want some serious answers.
I'll clarify on question 12. Of course, the question itself takes an extract from the paragraph, an incomplete extract, which may clarify in the answer. These get to be identified pending any decision on future delivery model. So this is about when the units are constructed. If the council then decides to operate them or lease to operate, there will be revenue implications at the time. It is a decision that the council will make in the future. Just to clarify my question.
Yeah, sorry, Chairman, just at the end of the answer. Said, however, the recent press release regarding this should be considered, and that is the recent press release and the press article talking about Holton Court wanting to sell to the council. So I think at the moment, given their position on this risk is very low with them, but the council has gone on record and said that they want to sell to the council. So I just want to draw that to the community's attention.
So in terms of next, we've got Councillor Gary, Councillor Fitzpatrick, and Councillor Gary. So, Councillor
Gary. Chair, I did actually clarify some points to Councillor Charles Green. I was going to just pick up on the presentation that Tom made earlier, where, you know, he mentioned the £9.9 million and potentially using that word that could happen. So I just wanted to draw us back to that because there didn't seem to be a question being answered. It was just going on and on away from project.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Chair. A few questions and then a few observations that I'd like the committee to consider, because that's in the first paragraph of our report at James Pagan. First question is, on phase 1A, there's a figure of nearly 1.3 million. Section 106. Could someone tell me what that's for? Yeah, one question. Phase 2 has a cost of 23 million. Now, is the cost of purchasing a townhouse and the bathhouse, is that in that 23 million, or is that what you're noting now? Is it in 1B? That's the second question. And if some of the projects that we're talking about are going to go ahead and this council acquires the library site, do we become the legal owner of the land and the building and the site? Is it legally ours? Three times. That's the question. And the observations I want to make is, I don't suppose we'll be through this committee, but my observations are that the right place for a food hall is in our market hall. The right place for our library is exactly where it is now, and it's a beautiful building. And the right place for a visitor centre is right next to that water tower where you're thinking of putting a football. They're my observations. I'd like this committee, I'll move that this committee send those observations to Cabinet.
Yeah, thank you for those questions, thank you. So on page 1A, I think everyone can clear the section 106 money. That's excludes the delivery of the affordable housing element, but it includes the acquisition of land that will be used in the future for that purpose. So that money goes towards the acquisition of land compared to the the cost of purchasing the land. That's a precursor to the first one day. So it's included in the first one day costs.
The townhouse and
the so purchasing the hatchery campus. And leave one of the library, I'll pass the council. I understand, yes, it would be the freehold ownership at that time. But those of the
building and the site,
so the terms will still be
as well. What would you have made note of it? And we'll see that at the end of the round.
So, Councillor.
Yeah, if you're looking for a second at the Council of Fitzpatrick's proposal, I'll say that. In terms of project that we're looking at, let's be clear on the borrowing, which is 1.1 million. The repayment that I disclosed for the final one, £5,000 for 25 years, is gone for 5 million. Then there's the additional Council of Fitzpatrick's reference 106 amount. 106 is £4 million for project. The project in phase 1B. So in total, taxpayers from East Anglia are now contributing £16.5 million to project D, when in the original cost was shown as £3 million. And so currently now, taxpayers are paying £16.5 million for original cost of £3 million. Let's be clear on that. I'd like to ask a number of questions with regards to project D. Have the visitor numbers for the visitor centre been assessed? Or is there a forecast of visitors within the visitor centre? Can you tell me who's going to be responsible for the ongoing operation cost of the visitor centre on the library site? Phase 2, which is only as yet unfunded, which is another £22 million roughly, taking the total project cost of project D to £45 million. Phase 2, which is unfunded currently,
has got a reference to an additional development for the visitor centre. Can you outline what that additional development is for the visitor centre in phase two? Question four, the 4 million section 106 money is to build 22 houses for key workers. That's roughly the cost of £182,000 per house, if you work it out that way. Have you identified what the phrase key workers covers? Because potentially that could cover your Amazon delivery driver. It could also cover council workers. So is an identification of what key worker means. Can you advise on the sale price for each one of those key worker houses? And finally, presumably with regards to the land swap of the library and the market hall, there's been a valuation coming out of both buildings. I'm not asking what that valuation is, because clearly it's commercially sensitive and I'm only looking forward. Can you advise me who's carried out the valuation of the library building as part of this project?
So the original project cost in the TIP 2 form, which public sector match funding is to be confirmed, sent to private sector match funding. The corporate business funded with the corporate businesses of the visitor centre. Now the housing model is part of the project at this stage. The proposal that the business case is that facility is operated by somebody else, unless the council elects to take the decision on using a different delivery model at the time.
The ongoing running costs of the visitor centre are as yet unknown, and are as yet unknown as to who will be operating it.
The business case is modelled on the basis of that building being transferred to somebody else to operate, a partner, so it wouldn't be the council to make those ongoing revenue costs. But unless the council changes and makes this in the future.
But we haven't yet got a partner associated with running the visit centre.
We've not contracted away with the engagement.
Thank you.
Additional development at the visit centre, so that accounts for the rooftop terrace area of the visit centre. Following section 106, the confirmation of who falls in the key worker category, that will be a decision to be made in the future. Sale price of the key worker houses, I'll have to revert back to you on the individual properties that have been modelled. We're looking at 2 and 3 bedroom properties based on 70% market value in the Burton. Same on the valuation, I'll have to revert back to you on that.
Can I ask the supplementary? Oh, no, I've asked a couple, but if I could ask one on the answer that I received with regards to phase two development of the visit centre. So, just to confirm then, Tom, phase two development of the visitor centre is the rooftop terrace, which is effectively, I guess, the cafeteria area on the rooftop of the visitor centre, where people can go and sit and have a coffee and enjoy the sights of the washers. From my perspective, the only way, that visitor centre is viable is to have a cafe open at the start. So if the cafe is not going to open until phase two, and we don't know how phase two is going to be funded or who's going to be funded, from my perspective, listening to what Angie is giving me now, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the cafeteria or the rooftop terrace development is completely at risk. We don't know how it's going to be funded, we don't know when it's going to be funded, but it's for me, one of the major draws of the visitor centre of the chief tech is going to come in, is the cafeteria on the rooftop. So for me, that puts that at risk.
I think we're just going to that and also come in, but the rooftop terrace isn't supposed to be the cafe area. That's not the case.
I was keen to come in because we're overlooking the fact that the council might be giving further grant money, such as shared cost areas and funds. And you know, I was touched on in the presentation that there's been lots of questions about the council pulling debt. We think there's a strong likelihood of there being more grant funding for this project, so just wanted to make that point to you, Chair, and the committee. And then I think right at the end of Councillor Grosvenor's first tranche of questions,
you may not have got an answer to the very last question, which would be that you would repeat that again.
Yeah, I mean, I will repeat that again.